Welcome to the Visual Impact Podcast, bringing you conversations and insights from the world of filmmaking. I'm Rob Newton, and today we are talking to DP and director August Olaf about his recent project, shooting an indie film with only one lens. This is a remarkable insight into the making of a low-budget independent film on location in Eastern Europe using only one lens, the Sigma 18-35mm T2 Cine Zoom. You'll discover the practical challenges they had to overcome, how they achieved their goal, and the answer to the biggest question of all, which SUV to use. Hi, Augie. Welcome to the Visual Impact Podcast. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Rob. It's good to be here. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Can you start by telling us a little bit about your background and the project we're discussing today?
My name is August Olaf. I'm an independent director and video producer. Some of you may know me. I co-founded a website called 4kshooters.net. It's a daily blog about all things filmmaking news related. And I also do the videos here at Visual Impact. Have a long relationship with these guys. It's like my second home here in the UK. I'm going to try to do this as short as possible to be straight to the point. So first things first, last May, actually this year, just a few months back, I got a chance, a really rare opportunity that I was very grateful for, to be a second camera assistant as well as a co-executive producer on a debut feature film by a really good friend of mine. The film's called Danny Legend God, at least that's the a working title. And we shot the film, the whole film, on a single Sigma lens. I really wanted to go over some of the reasons why we decided to do this and what actually happened. So just a little bit of a background again. I'm not a second AC by trade. So if there's any professional assistant cameraman out there, that's awesome. I'm sure I can learn quite a lot from you. But on this shoot, since this was a very low budget film, the budget was about 100K, I believe, in pounds. So this makes it technically, I guess, a micro budget film. One has to wear many hats. And given the fact that we had a very very small budget, not just the film overall, but the camera department, when we had the initial discussions with the DP and the director, we knew that we had to come up with a very compact package that was a good enough, obviously, for a cinema exhibition. Sure. The director wants to, the whole idea for the film is to be in a perfect world acquired by Netflix. So given the Netflix 4K requirements, we had to make some decisions as to use particular cameras that were on their cameras approved list. The good thing is that actually I own a Canon C300 Mark II, which just happens to be on the list. And I know there's a lot of people out there that kind of, you know, have mixed feelings about the camera. However, there's plenty of owner-ops like myself. I'm very happy with the camera. I got the camera about 2 years ago. I've shot many things with it, many documentaries, web stuff, and now a feature film. So camera is very robust. But again, I don't really want to make this about the camera, because this technically is about the lens. So when we had the initial discussions, we knew right away that the director wanted to have a handheld film. So 100% of the movie was going to be shot handheld. That meant that we had to use a very compact and lightweight package, but it had to be good enough for professional use.
Yeah.
Just one more kind of quick thing. I actually did this before. One time in 2013, I shot my own debut feature, Bandit, which not many people have seen, but it's even a lower budget film than this. And I used a single lens on that, one lens.
Was that the one that went to the festival?
Yes. We had a few, I would say a relatively good festival run for the kind of movie it is. We actually played here at the East End Film Festival in London last year, which was really exciting. And it went really well. But that movie was shot, for those of you interested, that was shot on the, I shot this on the Blackmagic, the original Blackmagic Cinema Camera 2.5K.
Really?
Which I believe was out 2012, I think. And as soon as the camera came out, I bought it. And I bought it with the intention this was going to be the camera, because it showed RAW.
Yeah.
And it was 2.5K, blah, blah, blah. And had EF mount. And it was, I mean, the images were lovely. And I think they still are. So not going into too much detail, but I did, because I just had no money. I had one lens. I had the 17-55 Canon EFS lens. That's a Super 35, well, APS-C technically lens. And for those of you out there who've used this lens, it's a photographic lens. So, it kind of zooms out and it protrudes. The focus is really wonky. So it's nowhere kind of suited for feature film production. Right. But because it's the only lens I had, and it was actually image stabilized. So it has an image stabilization, which, because I've shot the whole film, my debut film, 2013, handheld, I said, wow, you know, I've got all I need. And yeah. I didn't even shoot RAW for that film. I had no money for post-production, so we shot ProRes. But anyway, long story short, I did this once, and just as a joke, last year in pre-production for this film, I was talking to the DP, who's a good friend of mine. His name's Roman Vasilev, very experienced Eastern European DP. And I just said to him, hey, man, you know, I've done this before. You know, I've shot my film. You know, now we have a little bit more money and kind of a bigger crew to work with. And say, how about we do this with one lens? He said, yeah, I mean, if we find a good enough lens, they'll help us get, you know, a bit of a wider shot plus a kind of a not a very long zoom, but something for close-ups. Yeah, mm-hmm. we can totally do it. This will save us a lot of time. Again, just some background on the film. We had a crew about 20 people in total. I mean, it varied because it kind of kept changing on a day-to-day basis. But one of the most exciting things for this film is that we actually the main role was played by sort of a popular face back home on TV. I mean, he mm-hmm. had just finished the most watched TV show. It's like a hospital drama type of deal,
right?
You know, those are made like, you know, worldwide. It's kind of like, I guess,
like Casualty.
Like Casualty, yeah, exactly. Or ER. It was back in the old days, like the American one. Right. Yes. I mean, I guess all these shows are sort of very similar. I mean,
so is he the George Clooney then?
Yes, he was actually a really cool dude. I mean, at first we were like, well, you know, the whole film is basically on his shoulders. You know, he's like in, you know, 99, he's like in every scene. And we followed the whole premise of the film is it's basically a semi-documentary. It's a feature film. It's all made up. It's not real. But we wanted to, the whole idea the director had was that this film was to look like a documentary, like a Netflix kind of Vice style documentary that's shot, you know, with a documentary crew, which are actually in the film physically, because the whole premise is they're filming this guy kind of taking them through his kind of crazy life in Eastern Europe. And, this was a little bit stressful for us because we obviously he was someone that was famous, and we had to be very low key when we shot around town. But there were quite a few times where people would just interrupt, like they would literally walk into shot because it wasn't. We shot this film like a documentary. We didn't shoot it like we close off streets where, and we did this only one time, but it was because we had we had to use a stuntman for like a little bit of an action kind of scene, which turned out to be really cool. Basically, the scene is. The guy is next to a car, and there's another guy on a motorcycle, and a bicycle, and he's just riding down the street. And the main character gets really upset, and he kind of jumps and kicks the guy, and the guy falls down. And we did this with a team of a couple of stuntmen. It was really cool and really professional. We had some of the best people in the industry there. I have no idea how they got him to work for a little money, but they did it. But anyway, so this was one of the problems. We had to shoot very quick. We had to have ideally one lens.
Yeah.
So that's what happened. I was also a DID on the film. DID in the sense that it was my duty to take the cards off the camera, copy them, make sure nothing gets lost. And thank God I didn't lose anything because I'm no DID by trade. I understand that's a complicated position. Mm. And it nowadays it's grown to a point where they do, you know, the, you know, temporary grades on set and, you know, very complex things. But I did none of that. The film was shot in Eastern Europe, which was my home country. It was shot in a small town, which is an absolutely beautiful location. We shot for 4 weeks, shot on, again, on the Canon C300 Mark II. Just a bit of an idea of the breakdown of the workflow in the rig. We shot in 4K internal XAVC. A 10-bit 422. We didn't do external RAW or anything like that. I mean, initially the director wanted to do this, but we quickly realized that there was no money for that. But anyway, go back to the lens. Before we came to the decision to use the 18-35 T2, the Sigma CineZoom, we considered a few lenses at that point. The cinematographer is a big fan of the Zeiss Super Speeds, the Mark III, so the classic.
Nice. Yeah.
I mean, you guys had a few sets for sale recently.
Yeah, sure.
One sold for quite a lot of money because they're vintage lenses. They're beautiful. again, as with any vintage lens, people have their preferences, but the Zeiss Super Speeds, especially the Mark IIIs, are, I guess, desirable, not just for the fact that they are, you know, a classic kind of looking lens, but their bokeh is kind of the most acceptable out of the old Super Speeds. The Mark I's I've used, they have a bit of a triangular kind of shape and to the bokeh, and not many people like that. I'm not a fan of that, but we could have used these lenses. There was an offer from a rental house back in Eastern Europe that they could provide these lenses, but the problem was we had to change lenses on set. So that would have slowed us down, because the whole point was this movie was going to be really a documentary style shoot. It's not like on a feature film, you kind of, you know, do a few setups per day and then you take time between. No, this was literally, we start in the morning with a 12-minute long take. That's going from one car into another, going into a shop, and literally we're following this, and then we repeat it 20 times. So it could get really tiresome, and not just physically for the cinematographer and everyone else, but we didn't have time to kind of go back to the video village or whatever we would store our lenses. I mean, everything was in my car. So literally every morning we started the every shooting day was the camera was already built in the hotel. We literally rock up on set.
Yeah,
and the camera's just built. The only thing we needed to do was the sound guys needed to jam sync the audio with their kind of sound devices mixer that they were using, and that was it. We just loaded new batteries, boom, and we're good to go. Away we go. So the lenses, the Fujinon 18-55, that was a really cool lens that we wanted to use, but we couldn't figure out a way to adapt it because that was in, I believe, Fuji and E-mount. I'm not sure if that's in EF, but we couldn't make that work. But otherwise, very good lens. And also the Canon CN7, you know, the big 4K broadcast lens.
Yeah.
But that lens would have cost us just so much money to rent. And not just that, it was so heavy. When our DP tried it, he said, I'm not going to do this handheld. I just can't. I mean, sure, many people here, especially in the UK, use this lens, and it's a lovely lens. But just the style of this movie was just not possible for us. So we at the end said, hey, I have the 18-35 Sigma, the stills version, which I use every day. How about we try that? And we did. We did a few tests in the car, and it was like, wow, this is definitely going to work. Can we get this lens into a cinema version? Yes, Sigma makes the 18-35 T2 EF mount, proper cinema build. You know, it's got a 95 mil front. It's metal body, very sturdy. And we said, yeah, let's just get that lens. And thankfully, thanks to Sam from Sigma, who made it happen. I really want to thank him, because without him, it would have not been possible. So we ended up using this lens, deciding on the lens. We got the lens. And I remember the DP wanted to do like a chart test to test the lens against lens charts in a rental house, like the way you would normally do with any lenses before you start, especially a feature film. And I remember we ended up going to the rental house, and we just ended up chatting about the lens, because they hadn't seen the Sigma primes or the zooms before. They knew about them. Yeah. But for some reason, they're not popular in Eastern Europe at all. I mean, I'm sure there are some, but they're nowhere near as popular as like the Canons or the Zeiss or the Airs or any of the other lenses. Cooks especially, they're very popular back home.
Yeah.
So the guys at the rental house were like, wow, this lens is so cool. So we were out there doing anything but like test chart shots and things like that. So by the time we were finished, we were like, well, let's look at the footage. And they had this really kind of nice big monitor there. And we looked at the footage and it was fine. The next day we did a kind of a rehearsal for a scene where the main character will be in the car. He'll be driving around. We were just literally rehearsing like a scene the way we would shoot it. And everything went fine. The lens was great. We did all the focal lengths. We used the Teradek RT follow focus, a really professional, really awesome follow focus system, wireless. And we had a professional focus puller. She's very experienced, and she never used the Sigma lenses before. So for all of us, this was sort of like first time using this lens, but it just worked flawlessly throughout the whole whole shoot. Yeah. So some of the reasons, again, just to reiterate, it kind of ticked all the boxes. I mean, the 18-35 Sigma, it's compact size, it's got a good range, it's fast, T2, it's EF mount, it's properly built, like a proper cine lens, you know, full metal build. The image quality is really good. We didn't compare it to other lenses. We didn't, like I said, we didn't shoot charts, but from what we saw, you know, it would hold focus. It just, the images were just very, very nice. There was no kind of drifts of focus or things like that. Obviously, there is a little bit of a drift if you do zooming, because they're not perfect, but we'll get to that. And most of all, it would save us time from swapping lenses. That's it. We put the lens every morning on the camera, and it would not be unmounted until the very end of the day. Let's see what else we have. So a little bit of the workflow for the whole film. We had a crew of a team of four in the camera department. It was a very small team again, and which gets me back to the previous point. Had we had to have multiple lenses, like a full lens set, we would have had to probably not have the gaffer for all the days, or kind of cut costs some other way.
Yes, and compromises.
So we didn't want to do that because this would have slowed us down. I mean, at the end of the day, the DP made a choice to sacrifice sort of range.
Yeah.
And the ability to use like, oh, I want to do a 100 mil shot or 85. None of that, because he knew that it was more important to get the shots right, to get them in the very little time that we had, than to kind of be fancy with like some really cinematic kind of bokeh or background or anything like that. Which, to be honest, if you shoot at the 35 mil end on that lens and you're open at T2 or T2.8, you're going to get lovely bokeh in the background. It's really nice. And the director actually loved the way the lens looks, because it gives you that documentary feel, but it kind of makes the background a little bit milky. It doesn't look like a old shoulder cam, kind of small cheap camera, like the way the old documentaries used to look. Sure. It looks really cinematic. So we were all really happy about that. Again, the camera department was just four, the DP, the first AC, the focus pro, myself, and we had a gaffer for not all the days. We just had it for, I think, 10 days or something like that, which was really tough, because I'm no gaffer myself. I know almost nothing about like electrics and things. So we had to move really fast. There were a lot of long takes with a lot of dialogue. So it was really difficult, because in the car, we had an easy rig when we were outside to help with the with the kind of the handheld style. And you can see here in the car, this shot is basically, that's how the DP would have to be literally for 10, 15 minutes sometimes in the back seat, filming forward. Then he would need to move to the front seat, like turn back to get the reverse shot of the person on the back seat. So we had to make this whole rig as compact as possible. So just to kind of give you an idea of what we used, again, we shot 4K XAVC 10-bit 422 on the internal CFast 2.0 cards. We used the Duo 98 IDX batteries, V-mount.
Okay.
And we had a distribution box from Hawkwoods, which was really cool. And we used the Teradek Bolt 500LT to transmit wireless video signal to Video Village. So basically, our director was sometimes in the trunk or the boot of the SUV that we were using, which brings me to a really quick segue. One of the biggest troubles with this film was picking the right car, because the SUV, basically the main character's vehicle, which half of the movie happens in, was super important, because not just did he need it to look kind of, you know, proper for his character, but it also had to accommodate four characters, the DP on the backseat, the focus puller, and the director in the boot of the car. I mean, they were literally riding in the boot of that thing for 3 weeks, because the only way that she could pull focus, the focus pull, was if she was close to the camera. And if we were driving around the city, you know, you would lose the distance. So she would be in the trunk. And that's actually a common practice I've done this many times on music videos and things. And, you know, thankfully she's tiny. She's a small kind of compact person, and I'm sure it's uncomfortable. But you know, if you know me, I'm not getting in that boot, no way. Just if I go in, I probably wouldn't be able to go out. But the whole point was the Teradek, we pulled focus on the full focus from Teradek, the Mark 3.1, I guess, the RT, awesome system, and the Bolt 500LT, which is an SDI-based system. It's one of the more affordable systems that we use to transmit to basically a little monitor that the DP, the director held basically in his lap in a cage, a director's cage, to kind of monitor every single shot. And the whole problem was that there were no separate shots of like 10 seconds each or 20 seconds each. Everything was 4 to 12 minute takes. I mean, I think the shortest take we did was about four and a half minutes. It was just so long. We used a very compact matte box from Vocus, which I'm not sure if they do anymore, but that's a really neat matte box. It clamps on either to the lens, or it has 15 mil support. It takes two 4x4 filters. One of them, I think, rotates. The handles are from Small Rig. The rods are from Tilta. We used a shoulder pad from Shoot 35, which is actually a small UK-based company. They make kind of really budget things. And a wooden camera my favorite quick release plate from Wooden Camera, which is basically the only way we needed it is to just connect the rods to the camera. But it was very useful indeed. What are some of the things that I really liked about this lens? Obviously, image quality was huge. Very pleasant close-up, so the 35mm lens, especially when you're wide open. And it was quite sharp. Even though it was wide open, it was still sharp. And never having to change lens, those huge benefits, saved us a lot of time. The front of the lens is 95mm. That's standard. All the rings are 0.8 pitch, proper pitch, which is 0.8. So you could do technically motors on all three if you needed that. Thankfully, the DP and the director decided never to zoom in or do anything crazy with it. Was literally we were using it as a prime lens. That's it. Yeah. You know, once the shot starts at 28, it finishes 28 by the very end. It's really smooth. The rings are not too stiff. Some cine lenses, they can be a bit stiff, like the Super Speeds. I guess depending, because they're so old now, and depending on how well maintained they are, they can be really stiff, and some can be like just way too smooth. And that's not good. I learned this, that I didn't know, that you don't want your lens to be, you want a good balance. You don't want it to be too stiff or too kind of wobbly, because the focus puller, they need to have some resistance to kind of feel the, I mean, it's like a whole different art form, and I could never pull focus to save my life. So I have a huge amount of respect for all the focus pullers out there. The lens has a sealed back, so it helped us out a lot, because sometimes we were shooting dusty environments when we were in some abandoned buildings, and there was even a shot which was a bit like going off-road, and it was really dusty out there in these kind of mountain roads, and the whole camera was covered in dust, so I had to give it a really good clean after that. The lens worked flawlessly with the Teradek RT Follow Focus, which was a huge concern for us. We needed to make sure that we have a – that's why we had to have proper – cine lens. Well, we could have used any lens we wanted. It's just if it wasn't a proper cine lens, we would not have been able to integrate it with the full focus, and that would just defeat the purpose.
Yeah.
Very sharp, wide open at 2.2. What's not so great? The lens is not parfocal, so when you zoom in, the focus would drift. So that's not ideal. Again, if you're not using this lens as a zoom, if you're just literally using it as a variable prime, that's definitely not a concern at all. One interesting thing that it's a kind of a small thing is that it has illumination on the 18-35, kind of the name. So when you're in a dark environment, it would kind of light up. But for some reason, I don't know if it was this lens, the markings of the full focus wouldn't light up, so they weren't kind of covered in this luminous paint, which I found a bit strange. Now, I know that Sigma, they do a special version, of these lenses called a luminous range. So they're a little bit more expensive, but they kind of light up. We didn't have that, but it would have been nice to have. But just that this lens, I really thought that if you would have the 18-35 illuminate, why not have the rest of the bits? Or maybe I'm overthinking it, but anyway, I just put this on here for people that, in case they didn't know. And this is not a full frame lens, so not saying this is a negative, because I know the whole large format full frame thing, in my opinion, is kind of, I don't know if it's a fad. I wouldn't call it a fad, but it's just, I don't really care for it. I'm not at that level that I need to be really stressing about, oh, I need to shoot full frame. I mean, if you want to shoot full frame, great. If not, Super 35 has been a standard for 100 years, so I think it's going to be good for at least another 100. So that's not a huge deal, but it's not a full, for those wondering, it's not a full frame lens.
Okay, we just have a quick question.
Cool.
Any nighttime shooting, how did it hold up?
Yes, we had a few scenes, quite a few actually, where we shot literally at night. So at T2, we would literally shoot wide open. It held up very well. I think this would depend more on also on the camera as well.
Sure.
And thankfully, the C300, sure, it's not a, it's not an A7S or anything like this, but we would use it all the way up to a 1600 ISO, and in the grade, it held up really nice. Now, again, I need to preface this by saying I don't have any footage from the film here. I really wanted to show you guys some stuff, but I'm not allowed to, because A, the film's not finished yet, but I have seen some stuff that they've graded and that they've already edited, and there's a few club scenes. So we're in a club where literally, because we almost all the scenes were not chasing someone, but we're following someone walking into places. So when you imagine going from like a dark alley or dark corner into open a door and then a hallway, and all of a sudden there's this club, it was, this question I think is really nice, because it pertains to we would have to use a high ISO, and then literally by hand the DP would move the would close down the aperture when we go in, so we don't overexpose hugely the shot. That was actually a quite difficult shot, but the lens held up, to answer your question, very nice, even at night scenes, even at T2. But then we had to crank up the ISO quite high.
Yeah.
For the C300 Mark II, I think 1600 was the kind of utmost, the top usable range that we would get. A slight noise. Yes, there is some noise, but it kind of added to the more organic nature of the way it looked. And it was fine. The director loved it. DP as well. So, okay. All right. So the behind the scenes a bit here is a couple of shots that I want to show. Basically, this is the easy rig, or at least the knockoff of an easy rig that we acquired somehow. We use this on almost every scene that happened outside of a car.
Yeah.
And the photo on the right is basically the DP and the director walking through, doing kind of a walkthrough. It's an abandoned, it's not a factory, it's like this huge commercial space that was behind a, I don't want to say some factory, but anyway, it was this huge space that we needed to cover, you know, really quickly. There was things happening, people being chased. It was just absolute madness. So this easy rig kind of device was very helpful. As you can see, there's the Teradek mounted on the back. Sigma lens is on the front. You can't really see it. On the left side, this was the setup for the whole video village, the Teradek Bolt 500 LT on top with the, I think that's a Blackmagic video assist, the 7-inch, I want to say, yes, in a wooden camera director's monitor cage. And this is Yavor. This is the director of the film. He's monitoring a shot, and you can see the two main characters in the back. I have some more photos here that I want to show. Okay, so basically this is kind of a reverse of this setup that I was saying. You can kind of see on the left side, pretty much that's, I want to say, half the crew in there. I mean, the whole thing was handheld, one lens. It made us be very creative. It was limiting at times, but I think the limitations worked out, because had we had more options to explore with other lenses, I think it would have definitely slowed us down. And at the end, the way the director wanted the film to look, it would have been easier even if we shot it one single focal length. I mean, going even more extreme. And there were actually discussions that the DP, myself and the director had, hey, what if we get a 21 mil Zeiss lens or a Sigma, one of the Sigma Primes, which are actually awesome lenses as well, get a 24 or 20 or whatever wide one they have and just stick it on there.
Yeah.
And that was actually the plan B, that we were going to go if the zoom didn't work out, but we're just literally going to get a prime and just stick with it. Old school. So, yeah, I mean, it was a bit of an experience.
Would you do it again?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yes, I would definitely do it again.
With the same sort of rig and.
Yeah, I mean if it will fit the story and the way we want to tell it, definitely. Now, I'm gonna preface this by saying, I think it's more the, I'm not gonna try to give myself too much credit. Again, I wasn't the DP on this film. I wasn't the director. I was basically the second AC, but I was responsible for getting pretty much all the kit to make this possible. So. If it was up to me, I think it's more the people behind, like the creatives behind the camera. And I know that's a bit of a kind of a wishy-washy answer, but I would do it if the right people are behind the camera on the creative side. It's definitely workable. The 18-35, specifically this lens, in my opinion, is, I would say, definitely my favorite lens now. The stills version has been my favorite lens ever since I bought it. It gives you a lot of options. Yes, it's not too wide, it's not too long, but it's compact, it's fast, and it's great image quality. Especially the cinema version, I would shoot anything from a music video to a commercial, a corporate gig, documentary, feature film on this one lens. And there's also a 50-100 zoom that Sigma makes. They even sell those as a kit. So if you get those two, I mean, literally, you cover from 18-100.
Yeah.
T2, and it's very, very impressive. So yes, I would definitely do it again. I'm looking forward to actually getting this lens finally, so I can use it every day.
Yeah, I don't know whether we've covered this, but John's just asking, did you find it restrictive having only one lens? Was it sometimes you think, well, if only?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, it's always the case of, well, sometimes having a few options is a bit kind of spoils you for, let's try this, let's try that. And in our case, for this specific film, even though this was a debut feature film, and Yawur is a good friend of mine, we've done a couple of short films together as like a directing duo before, but this was, first off, this was his first film, feature film. He produced it himself, you know, got the funds himself. So we knew that basically everything was at stake for him. And my whole goal was, I've already shot my debut film. You know, I really want to make sure that he shoots his dream project as well. So yes, it was limiting in a way that we only had this to work with. But on the other side of that would be, had we had more choice, it would have been really difficult for him, being a first-time director, to kind of make the right decision, if that makes any sense. Yeah. What I'm trying to say is that a lot of times first-time directors, you know, they have their full set of cooks out there, full set of Sigma primes. And there'll be a case where, you know, the DP will be like, well, I want to do this on a 50. And go, oh, let's try an 85. Let's try 100. And then all of a sudden I'm not saying wasted half a day, but that indecision and sort of wanting to have that shooting for coverage.
Yeah.
I think shooting for coverage is for people that have you're shooting your third, second, fourth film, and you have like a larger budget to work with. Yeah, sure, you can probably do that. But if you're spending your own money and you have literally 3 weeks to get this thing in the can, you need to know what you're doing. Like you need to, before you go out. And thankfully, Yawur was super prepared. Every day he knew exactly what he wanted. Sure, we did some experiments. Hey, let's try this. Let's try the show a little bit wider. Yeah, we did that. But at no point in time did he ever say, at least he didn't say to me, saying, hey, you know, I wish we had an 85 or a 50 or a little bit of, we'll just move the camera forward a little bit. You know, if we needed to get a little bit tighter. Yeah, it's not perfect, but it did a job. I would say that I much rather would have the right tool for the job and have only one of it. This way, I don't get much choice. You either shoot at 18, you shoot at 24, you shoot at 35. That's pretty much it. You don't get a choice of 50 or 10 or 12 choices where it's basically, that's the one thing, you know, now that I'm trying to make my second film is not having like a clear idea of what shots I want.
Sure.
On set, that indecision, in my opinion, is that's never good. Nobody's perfect, but it's one thing that you're sitting out there and there's 25 people crew waiting for you to kind of make up your mind. And we're doing the same thing, just on a different focal length. Yeah. And we know that in the edit, you're going to go with the first choice. That's it. And it's just,
And I suppose even the talent, the actors, obviously will get frustrated as well.
Yeah. And this was, you know, for this film, I mean, you can see here on the screen right now, this is literally the director and the DP and the focus puller, literally that's how they spend the majority of their days.
Okay.
The car is a Nissan Patrol, I think it is. A little bit of an older SUV, but here's a funny bit. The director wanted a Range Rover. It was fancier and it was newer. And this car was rented from
you've got to have a Range Rover.
Oh, exactly. Of course. But the problem with the Range Rover was, and I'm a car guy, but Range Rovers I know nothing about, except that I love the Defender. The Range Rover we had, I think it was one of the newer sporty ones, it was so tight in the back seat. The DP, even though he's a pretty slim guy and very athletic, he said it was way too uncomfortable for me. Mm. He's like, I just can't make this work. So the director was, he was cool enough to say, okay, let's try another car. And it was between the Nissan and a Toyota Land Cruiser, but that was just way too gigantic and it was more expensive to rent. So we finally decided on this based on the fact that it could hold, two people in the boot comfortably. And actually I don't have photos of this, but there's also sometimes we would have the sound recordist in the back with them. So it was really tight space. So, but yeah, let's just, on the left side, this is actually a very fancy house that we shot in.
Yeah.
And we were told every 5 minutes, don't touch anything, don't break anything.
I thought this was your house.
I don't know. It's just way too, it's out there. I mean, it was actually, the guy who owns it was actually really cool.
Mm.
He owns some sort of a factory, a big businessman, but a really cool guy, a lot into art and weird things and hunting, and you can see some trophies and stuff. Mm. It was a lovely house, huge. If I was shooting ENG, I would definitely want to have something like a 18 to 50 or an 18 to 75 or something even longer. So I don't know. I mean, you can make it work, but I'll tell you what, there's a 50 to 100 that Sigma do. And if you get those two lenses, you can definitely, you know, do ENG work with. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be tough. So for ENG, I don't know. I probably wouldn't recommend it.
Have you ever used a Sigma 50 to 100? Apparently it contains heavy breathing.
Yes. Yes, we did. We actually had access to that lens as well. Lovely lens. No doubt about it. It gives you like, you know, four primes into one. But, you know, it does breathe quite a lot. The 18 to 35 breathes, but because it's a wider lens, mm-hmm. the breathing is not that bad.
Sure.
And you can kind of get away with it. But on the 50 to 100, you can see it's pretty heavy. So, I mean, again, if you are using these as variable primes, if you set it at 50 or set it at 85 and just shoot with it, it's perfect. Mm-hmm. I personally am not a fan of zooms at all, so I never use a zoom. I mean, if it's like some sort of on the cuff documentary thing where I have to zoom, yeah, I'd zoom in, but I wouldn't do like a old school 70s zoom from like, you know, an establishing shot onto a close up of someone on the window, which that was cool for that time.
Yeah.
And I think it still looks good, but for a modern production, doesn't fly in my opinion. Okay. But good lens though, 15 to 100 is a very decent lens. It just does very heavy breathing, but optically sharp, very sharp images.
Mm-hmm. Any examples when the lens was pushed to the limit? The lens you used?
I mean, this kind of goes back to like shooting at night, or I remember there was quite a lot of times when we would be in the car, and then it would be so tight that we would have to zoom out. But then 18 is not that wide, and especially on a, you know, super 35mm chip, the DP would have to be physically all the way back, and we even have to open a window where the camera would be just kind of hanging out. So yeah, I mean, pushing the lens to the limit in any of the situations where we were kind of outside in a bit of a dusty environment and the low light situations, so those were, you know, a little bit challenging. So
sure.
I would say all the club scenes, I was pretty terrified walking into the host, not just for the lens sake, but also the fact that we had to navigate a live crowd, and that's always unpredictable. Yeah, the lens just was absolutely fine. We shot, I would say, more than half of the film wide open. So a T2 was always stressful for the lens. I mean, anytime you open a lens to its maximum aperture, and then looking at the dailies, I would be like, oh my God, you know, we soft, like we have focus here. Yeah, I mean, there were times because the whole film moves so quick. Yeah, we would drift in and out, but, you know, we had a really, really good focus puller, so she would nail in, like, almost every take was, I mean, I think out of the whole time, she only asked once, like, hey, let's do one, because I wasn't quite sure, and, like, out of the whole film, just one time,
she was
really cool, and at the end of the day, she loved the lens. I mean, I would go back to her almost every day, be like, hey, so what do you think, this lens, and you know, she's like, are you trying to push these lenses? I'm like, it's a good lens. She's like, yeah, it's really nice and no problems at all.
Yeah,
she loved it. And she said that, yeah, if those were available to rent back in Eastern Europe, that they would definitely be using it for other films. So all the times we would push the lens to a T2 or shoot at night, or, you know, any environment where it was potential for dust to get in, those were challenging, but got through it. So, well, hopefully this was useful. I just wanted to add a few quick things. I will, as soon as I have, they released a teaser trailer for the film, I will definitely send Rob a link. And also keep an eye out on the blog, 4kshooters.net. I will definitely be updating the review. I did a review of this lens, which basically encapsulates a lot of the things I already discussed here. It's on the blog, so if you want to head out and check it out,
sure,
you can do that as well. And I want to thank Rob for having me, and thank you guys for your time today. Hopefully this was useful again, and until next time.
Yeah, thanks very much. Hope you enjoyed it, and bye for now.
Yeah, bye-bye.
That was Director of Photography and Director August Olof talking about the practical challenges of producing a low-budget movie on location in Eastern Europe using only one lens. Thanks for listening. You can find more podcasts, blogs, and exclusive visual impact content by going to our website, visuals.co.uk.